This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is going to be about street communism in America. Now, you're well aware of left-wing riots, left-wing protests, because no matter how old you are, if you're 8 or 98, you've watched them. They've been all over your television set, all over your social media. There's always a new outrage about something. It's an LGBTQ rage or a George Floyd rage. For some reason, people are always in the streets with signs and throwing things and vandalizing things. And so it can be understandable, I'll put it that way, if you think that that's just kind of how it goes. Well, let me explain something. It's not normal. It's not acceptable. We've always had this never-ending string of left-wing violence in our streets because that's what American communists, American Democrats want. They have created a vast network of organizations, then sub-organizations, then subs to the sub-organizations, specifically so they can find ways to funnel money and resources to violent, often mentally ill street animals who do their bidding. And let's understand what the game is here, why the game is this way. And to do so, you're going to have to attempt to think like a communist for a brief moment. So I need you to set aside your morality, just for a brief moment. Set aside this right and wrong, and you don't want to hurt innocent people. And things. You have to set that aside when you think about this, because the communist doesn't think about those things at all. Set aside all that stuff. Now think about this. Think about this. Think about, I'll make it about me in the media world. Let's say I don't care about right and wrong. I don't care about hurting people. I don't care about anything. And so wherever I go, maybe I'm going into business negotiations. Maybe I'm going to a big event to give a speech. Maybe I'm just going down to McDonald's up the road. But wherever I go, I have 10 very violent people around me with weapons, sticks, knives, Molotov cocktails, and I can deploy them after anybody I want for any reason I want. Morality aside, isn't that power? It's not good power, right? You don't want to do it. I'm certainly not encouraging you to, but it's power, isn't it? Hey, give me what I want or these freaks behind me will hurt you. That's exactly how America's Democrat Party, that's how they've organized a street revolution. Remember that they're fighting a revolution. The street animals are trying to burn down everything. That's why the exact same people will show up at an LGBTQ rally in Orlando, and the next week they're at an ICE protest in Los Angeles. What do they want? To destroy everything. And Democrats in this country understand you can deploy them at a moment's notice. The greatest recent example we saw of this was George Floyd. We all woke up, saw some horrible video online. Gosh, it looks bad. He's sweaty. He's crying. The cops on his back. It was time to wait for the facts, right? Okay. Let's figure out what's going on. But no. If you're a Democrat and you've had goals like destroying America's police force, turning criminals loose from jail to help your revolution. If your goals are things like that, you woke up and you realized you have an opportunity. So what did they do? Did they try to calm things down? Let's wait and analyze the facts. No, they deployed the troops.
This man's life matters. He matters. Being black in America should not be a death sentence. For 5 minutes, we watched as a white officer pressed his knee into the neck of a black man. To the black community, to the family, I'm so sorry.
Black lives that are under threat every single day. And I'm glad the mayor of Minneapolis stepped up right away in the police department and took swift action to fire the officers involved. But I don't think that's enough. And I don't think we can move forward unless we take aggressive action to rip out the insidious race-based inequalities and corrupt every part of our society.
Deploying the troops. And remember, that's how they look at it. They look at it as they have a standing army they have created, they have organized it, they have paid it, and they can deploy them wherever they want them. You're seeing it right now in Los Angeles, Seattle, other places with the ICE protests. This is an army that has been deployed. Back to the St. George Floyd stuff. In fact, back to the analogy I use with me and my 10 bodyguards at McDonald's in a business meeting. Maybe you're saying to yourself, that's kind of ridiculous. Surely there would be reporting on it, law enforcement? No, that's where America's media comes in. Because when America's elite communists call up their street communists and deploy them to do combat at an ICE facility in Los Angeles, Democrats are aware it may not look that great on the evening news. How do you handle that? Well, you simply take over the news and they'll cover your violence like this.
I want to be clear in how I characterize this. This is mostly a protest. It is not, generally speaking, unruly.
What you're seeing behind me is one of multiple locations that have been burning in Kenosha, Wisconsin, over the course of the night. A second night since Jacob Blake was seen shot in the back 7 times by a police officer. And what you are seeing now, these images came and come in stark contrast to what we saw over the course of the daytime hours in Kenosha and into the early evening, which were largely peaceful demonstrations in the face of law enforcement.
You're seeing the same thing now. You've seen it over and over and over again. America's media knows it has to cover for the street animals while the troops are in the streets fighting their revolution. And keep in mind, the Democrat Party and the street animals, the elite communists and the street communists, they are glued together. And as I mentioned in the very beginning, it is power. It is powerful to have a bunch of freaks who will commit acts of violence on your behalf. That's why Democrats call for it all the time. That's why they tell their troops to stand by all the time. How many times, let me ask you something, how many times have you heard a Democrat, be it Hakeem Jeffries or Jayapal or any one of them, talk about being street ready? They always talk about being street ready this and street ready that. Here it is.
We are going to fight it. Legislatively, we are going to fight it in the courts, and we're going to fight it in the streets.
Never before in my life have I called for mass protests, for mobilization, for disruption, but I am now.
We might call this getting strike ready. I think of it as getting a strike ready or street ready.
I am so thankful. I'm going to keep screaming in the halls of Congress. I just need y'all to make sure that y'all keep screaming in the streets.
Mobilized. It's their army. We have a great show for you tonight. Let's talk to some people about all this stuff. Next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I love sleeping. I'm a huge sleeping fan. And maybe right now, maybe you're spending a whole lot of time doom scrolling on social media at night. Oh my gosh, war and everything. You still need to sleep. Put the phone down and go pick up a cup of hot chocolate. Dream powder hot chocolate from Beam. It's not just because it's delicious, which of course it is. It's because it has a bunch of natural things in it that are going to have you sleeping like a baby and waking up, taking off like a rocket ship. Because it's natural things, reishi and all this stuff. You want that? I sleep like a baby every night, 8-9 hours, and wake up feeling good, not groggy. That's what Dream Powder from Beam can give to you. You want a huge discount? Go to shopbeam.com/JesseKelly. I like cinnamon chocolate, but they have a bunch of flavors. Go, get some. Years ago, that was 2019, Andy Ngo was assaulted by Antifa. Let's check in with Andy, find out about this group, find out what happened that day. What are they up to nowadays? Joining me now, Andy Ngo, author of the book Unmasked. If you would like to know more about Antifa, it's probably the best read I've picked up yet on this group of malcontents. Okay, Andy, for those of us who don't remember, and we have a lot of obviously new viewers by now, what happened that day?
This was June 2019, and as I describe what happened then, it's really no different than what's unfortunately happened to all the journalists recently in the last week and a half in Seattle. But I was in Portland, Oregon. That's where I'm from. Since going back to 2016, there has been a surge of left-wing violence in Portland that was legitimized by the Democrat leadership locally, statewide, and also nationwide in reaction to Donald Trump's first administration. And my reporting was, my commentary on what I was recording was critical of the violence because it was criminal behavior, property destruction, assault, and other criminal organized activities. And I also recorded videos and just let the videos speak for themselves. And for that, I eventually became a target. I think a really big changing point was back in 2018 when I reported on a really violent Antifa occupation of the local ICE facility. And this is going to come up again in terms of what's happening now because of all the hysteria and lies at that time against ICE by Democrats and the liberal media. There was this takeover of the ICE facility in South Portland where the building was surrounded, the exits were blocked off. It was essentially a hostage situation. And at that time, we had a mayor named Ted Wheeler who told, as a police commissioner, he had a dual role. He told the Portland police to not respond to it. He said, this is federal property, they're a problem. So there was this hostage situation for hours. And it took many, many days for federal agents and officers to mobilize there. And during that time, That whole building had been severely vandalized, shut down, an encampment was built. And I wrote about, I reported on it, and it was published in the Wall Street Journal at that time. This is summer 2018. And then everything kind of changed from there. I started getting more threats. By the following summer, 2019, was when I was beaten to a pulp and suffered a brain hemorrhage. And then the riots of 2020 happened. I did my reporting on the ground there for months. Portland had the longest weeks of violent rioting. And it, I mean, it went all the way to 2021. And when I returned to the streets in May of 2021 in Portland, I was jumped and beaten again when I was undercover. So there's a long history of violence by Antifa against me, unfortunately. And we're years out from that. And with what I've witnessed in these videos that have been recorded in particularly the Pacific Northwest, but other places, those same networks and malcontents and violent agitators and also newcomers have been involved in the insurrection in Los Angeles and other cities that have become very violent. The riots in LA has kind of died down a bit, but it's been escalating more in Portland and Seattle.
Why the Pacific Northwest, Andy? Because this breaks my heart. I love Portland. I mean, it's been years since I've been, but gosh, it's such a beautiful friggin' place. Seattle was at one point one of the coolest American cities, and yet these places have become the hotbed where this stuff happens all the time. I mean, we're giving up control of large portions of Seattle with all the CHAZ nonsense. What's in the water in the Pacific Northwest?
So these are states and local jurisdictions at the county level that are entirely run by Democrats. But that's not the only variable, because there are other places like that in the U.S., like in Massachusetts, where I don't think the local elected officials would tolerate extended durations of political violence on the street. But in Portland and Seattle, the Democrats there are more, they would call themselves progressive, more radical. And even the ones who are more sensible still are dealing with constituents and voters who have been systematically over many, many years brainwashed to become radical to the point where they don't realize that they're extremists. I mean, people think that it's peaceful protesting to start fires and to assault people and to attack. And they call it self-defense, community self-defense, and all this ideology. It's been institutionalized in education and in our local media for so long. And also, I think maybe because the cities are blue collar, at least in Portland, Seattle a bit less so, but in Portland it's a blue collar progressive city with a lot of white guilt, because it's a majority white city. So it's like the white leftists there feel like they, it's not enough to be just a liberal or a Democrat and support all these woke stuff. You have to go further than that. And so they turn a blind eye or they excuse when people are engaging in acts of violence for a cause that they're sympathetic to. And we saw that in 2020, and just recently, like in Seattle, when there's been violence against Christians who were worshiping in Cal Anderson Park, which is this public city park that is in the middle where CHAZ used to be. The mayor released a statement, the mayor of Seattle said that this was a provocation. He condemned the Christians. He didn't really have much to say about the far leftist extremists who carried out religiously or attacks on people based on their religion. And so we have like weak leadership and cowardice, ideology, politics, all of that brewed together. And also, you know, the mayors are the ones who appoint the police chiefs. So even if a police chief is not necessarily woke or leftist, they're sort of pressured to move in that direction. I think that's the case right now in Seattle and Portland. Personally, that's my view. Seattle has a new police chief. He just came from Madison, Wisconsin. He's a black man who's said some stuff in the last week that I find actually quite disturbing. He basically, not basically, he said at a press conference that he he wouldn't be surprised, or he was expecting, to be convicted in prison for obstruction against the federal government. And that's quite an astounding thing for a police chief of a major city to say. In Portland, we've gone through police chief after police chief in the last 5 years, and you know, the mayor has constantly appointed either a woman or a black person because they can't have a white man do it. But the last police chief, the one who was the police chief during the 2020 riots, he stepped down to a lesser role. And we have a police chief in Portland who's a straight white man who has a lot to say about DEI. I think it's this white guilt, like you have to feel like you need to say all those type of things in order to please these sort of radicals that are within the city.
Andy, Antifa seems to show up no matter what the riot seems to be about. It could be St. George Floyd, it could be ICE, it could be freaking LGBTQ, it could be anything, and Antifa seems to show up. What do they want?
So the ideology is anarchist communism, and they're revolutionary. They are really wanting to see the destruction of America, the literal destruction, like regime change, which is why they support every enemy of the U.S., whether it be Hamas or Hezbollah, jihadist groups, or terrorist communist groups that have existed in prior decades. They support all of that. And they claim to be opposing things like fascism or racism. And that may be part of their ideology, but there are also a lot of other things in their ideology that make them very violent, very dangerous, and extreme. And they attract malcontents. You've written about malcontents in your own book and in your own writings. And these are people who have, I think, disproportionate amounts of mental health issues. In fact, some of the people who have been, at least one of the riot suspects who have been federally, who was arrested in Portland over the attack, an ongoing attack on the ICE building. This was a teenager runaway just last year. I was just looking into what Portland police have said about him, and a year ago, his family had reported him missing. So these are kind of some of the people that are being recruited into Antifa, and they're sort of like riffraff that they can use to give them weapons and have them engage in violent brawls with police and throw bombs, things like that. Sort of like it doesn't really affect the movement if these people are ultimately in prison, and very few of them are. There are also those who are in white collar positions who I would say are smarter in how they are part of the conspiracy. So they'll do things more like in the areas of recruitment and distributing these really radical booklets and texts, very akin to terrorist literature. It is terrorist literature if you read it. They'll tell you how to make bombs, why to do it, who to target, how to besiege buildings. How to evade law enforcement detection through wearing these masks and black uniforms and destroying evidence. So, you know, there's so much evidence of the criminal conspiracy aspect behind Antifa, and the fact that they are so good and adept at exploiting the First Amendment protections that exist in the U.S., they take that to full, not just to advantage, to exploit it. So they always fall back on the fact that they are not a formal organization, therefore, you know, evading some more serious charges. But that's kind of all part of how they train their recruits about, you know, we're not a group, we are just a movement, which is a lie. And I think if they're really, if the federal government wants or to do some type of impact on this violent element that exists in the American far left, they really need to pursue federal RICO and conspiracy charges against some of these individuals, because that evidence is there. We cannot rely on local prosecutors to do it, mostly because there's a lack of will. You're not going to see those type of prosecutions out of Multnomah County, where Portland is, or King County, where Seattle is. But it has been done in San Diego County, of all places. Actually, it was last year that SoCal Antifa, which is a cell of militant Antifa members, was completely broken up. There was a trial. All 12 were convicted either through plea deals or at trial. And the evidence showed the conspiracy between one another with so-called journalists. In the discussions, they were all able to retrieve that on devices that were, some of them destroyed some of their devices, but some were able to, some of these devices were able to be retrieved. So your viewers and listeners can look in my reporting into SoCal Antifa in San Diego for like an example, a blueprint of what prosecutors can do. And also in Georgia State, the attorney general there, Mr. Carr, is prosecuting in an ongoing Antifa domestic terrorism and RICO conspiracy case, 61 suspects, and money laundering as well. You know, these type of cases, whenever I tell people, they're really shocked. Even the ones who follow my Antifa reporting, they don't hear about this at all in the national press. And I think that's intentional by those in liberal media. They don't want people to be informed that actually there are examples of where people in Antifa are involved in organized conspiracy.
Yeah. Andy, you stay safe, my man. Great work, as always. All right. Let's find out what's going on in California. Next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, we shower in estrogen. Just think about that. Not only do we drink estrogen, it's in our water, we shower in it. And I guess that probably helps explain why American men have lost half their testosterone in 50 years. 50% down in 50 years. It is a societal crisis that goes beyond politics. It really goes beyond anything. We can't continue as a country without testosterone. But what do we do about that? Oh, I know there's a new clinic on the corner. You can go down and get a needle jammed in your arm, or you could handle it naturally. Chalk has natural herbal supplements for everybody, men, women, young, old. They have a male vitality stack. That's what I take every single day. 20% increase in your T levels in 90 days. You're going to feel like a different person. You'll be mad at all the time you weren't taking it. Chalk.com/JesseTV.
My message to Los Angeles is we are a city of immigrants. We take pride in the diversity in our city, and it is my job as the mayor of Los Angeles to protect all Angelenos, regardless of when they got here, why they came, or where they came from. I think that the idea that what is going on here is chaos and we need federal intervention is just not accurate. It doesn't paint an accurate picture of what's going on here at all. And really, what is going to help would be an end to the raids. For a city not to know when, where, how, or why raids take place, you can imagine that the entire population of immigrants is very unsettling. And that the real thing that's happening here are the egregious ICE raids.
Okay. Karen Bass, Los Angeles. California itself. California is beautiful. I freaking love it. It is paradise if you've ever spent time there. And it is evidence that communists really can destroy anything they touch. They really can. Joining me now, Christopher Moritz knows a lot more about that than I do because he wrote the book on it called Failed State about how you wreck a place as beautiful and wonderful as California. Okay, Chris, Karen Bass, what's this lady's background?
She's a Maoist. I mean, I don't know how else to describe her. She spent her youth in the 1970s involved with organizations in San Francisco that were explicitly Maoist. She was involved in another organization, the name of which escapes me, but was in the same vein, Fellow Travelers. She made at least 7 or 8 visits to Cuba, even during a period in which there was a prohibition on travel to the island. She has praised Castro. She's a community organizer, right? She is feckless. She is stupid. She is ideological. She's very much cut from the same cloth of many big city blue mayors that we see across the country. She's kind of a more visually acceptable version of Lori Lightfoot.
Can you explain how she rose to Los Angeles mayor? Because that is a big boy position of political power. She sounds like just a former street animal. How in the world did she rise to that position?
Oh, Barack Obama. Barack Obama strongly supported her in the primary, and essentially in California, of course, the primary is the only election that matters, the Democratic part, Democrat primary. So to be successful in that, you really need some sort of institutional backing. In her case, it was Obama.
Oh, great. Okay, Gavin Newsom wants to be president really, really, really bad. Here he was trying to be the tough guy.
Tom Homan, the border czar, said to me yesterday he did not rule out literally arresting you,
yep,
nor Mayor Bass,
yep,
if you interfere in his words.
Well,
he said you hadn't yet.
He's a tough guy. Why doesn't he do that? He knows where to find me. But you know what? Lay your hands off 4-year-old girls that are trying to get educated. Lay your hands off these poor people who are just trying to live their lives, man. Trying to live their lives, paying their taxes, been here 10 years. The fear, the horror, the hell is this guy? Come after me, arrest me. Let's just get it over with. Tough guy. You know, I don't give a damn. But I care about my community. I care about this community. The hell are they doing? These guys need to grow up. They need to stop. And we need to push back. And I'm sorry to be so clear, but that kind of bloviating is exhausting. So, Tom, arrest me. Let's go.
He really wants to be arrested, doesn't he, Chris?
Oh, of course. That's all he wants. By the way, we should sort of differentiate Bass from Newsom. Newsom is not a communist. Newsom is certainly not a Maoist. Newsom is not a radical. Newsom is not a revolutionary. Newsom is a product that was created by certain special interests, particularly some families that had backed his entire career and brought him into San Francisco social life and up the ladder and failing upwards, as happens in California. Newsom is a pure reactive individual. He does not really have agency. He responds to events and very, very adeptly, I should say. Like, he's a very good actor. And he is, you know, in that sense, a completely cynical, opportunistic figure. When he says, arrest me, like, it's kind of funny, I think, because it's just so obviously campy in a way. And he is campy. But he wants to get arrested because he saw that when Donald Trump had that mugshot, it's sort of the thing that will live in infamy. And have you noticed that a bunch of other Democrats in recent weeks are now trying to get themselves arrested? Like this Senator Padilla, who's a joke, who's always been a joke. I mean, he really is, let's say, like, cognitively challenged. He's well known to be such and a lackey in California. I actually didn't know he was our senator, to be honest. Like, I mean, in California, you kind of become like numb to like, yeah, the progressives are ruining everything, but, you know, at least let's go like have a cocktail or something. It's just, it's beyond a point of like caring because we're so oppressed. And so Padilla, like, I found out he got named, Kamala Harris's seat. But, you know, it doesn't matter because in California, it really does not matter how qualified or unqualified or intelligent or retarded that you are. And Kamala Harris is a perfect example of that. Padilla is the next evolution in that. Really, a really dumb, dumb guy. But he did this whole big thing. I'm going to take on Kristi Noem and got tackled. This is what he wants. This is what they all wanted. And in New York now that's happening, the New York mayoral candidates are trying to get themselves arrested with these, like, shots of them all red-faced and being held back. I mean, come on. Like, just stop. Just stop the bullshit, please.
Chris, I have to ask. You said Newsom is controlled, created by families, certain families. Mm-hmm. What families?
The Gettys. The Gettys have controlled his political career, his career beyond politics, even his entire life. And this is a relationship that goes back two generations to Gavin Newsom's grandfather, who was involved in city politics in San Francisco and became deeply enmeshed with the Brown family. All of them became sort of tied closely to the Getty family through philanthropy, through prep schools, all really centering around the neighborhood of Pacific Heights, San Francisco. And there's intermarriage, you know, and it's like, it truly is almost like, I mean, it's, maybe this is a stretch of an example, but it's sort of like the late Roman Republic, where the Senate class was all married in with other senators, and there was a kind of perpetuation of their power through consolidation of personal relationships. So Gavin Newsom, his career began when he started a vineyard and restaurant in Napa called Plump Jack's. This was financed by the Getty family. It was really only successful because of the Getty family. When he entered San Francisco social life and then San Francisco politics, that was also facilitated by his patrons in the Getty family, and they have kind of invested in him continuously through today, and I'm sure have a vested interest in him becoming president. So Gavin Newsom, you should think of as kind of a product, an experiment created in a lab by oligarchic interests in San Francisco.
That's a great image. He's basically a drone. He's a humanoid controlled by someone else. That's wonderful. Chris, thank you, brother. Come back. All right. Liz Wheeler is going to join us. Talk about these protests. All these protests, we always talk about how they're being funded. They're funded, they're funded, they're funded. She has a name. She's been digging into this. We'll talk to her next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Feels like the street animals are restless, if you will. We just saw the stupid No Kings protests. But as we've discussed many, many times before on the show, 99% of the riots you've seen in your life, every time the animals take to the streets, it's paid for and organized. It's not organic. It's not normal people like you with lives, families, sitting at home, getting outraged and busting out the poster board for some stupid sign. This is all the Democrat communist network in this country, which is funded, organized, and you're seeing a lot of it now. Question is why. Joining me now, Liz Wheeler, host of the wonderful Liz Wheeler Show. Okay, Liz, they dropped $2.1 billion with the B on the No Kings protest, and it just didn't pop off. Why?
No, it didn't. In fact, I unintentionally drove through a No Kings protest just on my way to do what normal people do on the weekend, which is visiting family. And I passed by a luxury white Mercedes. I'm talking like a new model, chrome. The driver has his arm hanging out the window with a poster board sign that says, "Democracy is under assault." And my husband's driving the car, and he's like, "Yeah, bro, Pol Pot's really coming for you in your spiffy white luxury Mercedes." The left, I mean, obviously hilarious. I was shrieking with laughter because this is who the left is, right? They recruit these gullible, wealthy, boomer liberals to come out to their protests who are not harmed by leftist policies on one hand. And then on the other hand, they recruit these radical, revolutionary Marxists to stage these violent riots, the so-called anti-ICE riots. Not really about anti-ICE. It's really about being pro-illegal alien out in LA and New York. And of course, you're right. None of this is real. None of it's grassroots. None of it's organic. It's all not only organized and coordinated by certain groups, but it is paid for by people who hate you and who hate America.
You have been doing a lot of digging on this. Whenever Liz Wheeler gets on something, she normally gets to the bottom of it. What have you found?
Yes, there will be a congressional investigation soon, in fact, because some of the groups behind the violent anti-ICE riots, I mean, some of the groups are the Party of Socialism and Liberation. It's an openly communist group that's splintered off from a larger communist group here in the United States. Maybe you've never heard of them. Maybe you're just hearing about them now. They're one of the groups that coordinated a lot of these anti-ICE, these violent riots, and they're funded. This group is funded by a man, an almost billionaire. He's not quite a billionaire, although I think he styles himself as one, by the name of Neville Roy Singham. It's a name that a lot of us on the right are not super familiar with. We're a lot more familiar with names like George Soros. But I would argue, and I know this is a pretty big claim to make, I would argue that Roy Singham is more influential right now than George Soros because he is, believe it or not, more revolutionary than George Soros. George Soros, of course, is pro-open borders. But Roy Singham is an avowed Marxist and communist who's actually hiding out in China. He lives in Shanghai, China, even though he's an American citizen. And if you live in China, you have to do so with special permission of the CCP. He shares an office with a Chinese communist propaganda firm, and not just shares an office building. I mean, literally shares an office. He's been seen at Chinese propaganda conferences writing in a red notebook with a hammer and a sickle on him. He is like as communist as you can be as an American capitalist who made almost $1 billion selling his tech company. He's the one funding the Party for Socialism and Liberation who's staging these riots. He also, this seems at first like a weird connection until you understand the Chinese influence behind it, he's also the one funding a lot of the pro-Palestinian and pro-Hamas violent protests in the United States. So he funds the Palestinian Youth Movement Group. He funds Students for Justice in Palestine. So when you saw a lot of those Palestinian flags at the so-called anti-ICE ride in LA, a lot of the keffiyehs, the neckerchief worn by the terrorists, the Hamas terrorists, that's not a coincidence. It's the same people that Roy Singham is paying to riot on behalf of his pro-Palestinian views as he is now paying to riot on behalf of his communist views, ostensibly the anti-ICE riots. This guy's now going to be investigated by Congress for funding this unrest in the United States because it is an anti-American endeavor. There's been document requests that he's been subject to from the House Oversight Committee. That would be, of course, Comer is the chair over there. Congresswoman Luna, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene have been on this. On the Senate side, Senator Josh Hawley is also investigating the Party for Socialism and Liberation and who exactly is funding them. It's not really a secret who's funding them, but this guy, Roy Singham, that's a name that we should learn. It should become a household name because this guy is one of the most influential figures in fomenting the violent aspects of the Democratic Party, which we've seen since probably 2015 was the start of that, through 2020 until now. This guy's behind it.
Liz, do we know anything about this guy's motivation? Everyone knows by now, like you said, we've been talking about George Soros for years. We know he's one of these God complex type people. He's admitted that about himself, that believes part of his role in life is to destroy America, all that other garbage. Singham, what's his deal?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, when you look into the background of this guy. He was once asked a couple years ago by the New York Times whether he works directly for the Chinese Communist Party. And he had some flowery denial where he said, "I am not given direction by any government. I march to the beat of my own drum. I act based on my own values." Well, you look into this guy's background and you're like, yeah, you're acting according to your own values. Your values are communism, bro. His father was a communist. His father's Sri Lankan, by the way, a Sri Lankan immigrant. His mother was Cuban. But his father was active in the Cuban Revolution. He was pro-Castro. His son, Roy Singham's son, works for a Marxist think tank funded by Roy Singham. This guy was part of the League of Revolutionary Black Voters, which is a communist group. He was actually investigated back in the 1970s by the FBI for being a communist. I think it was either in 2021 or 2023, Roy Singham wrote a tribute letter. We posted this on my social media. Anybody can go and find this. You can look at the episodes we did on the Liz Wheeler Show from last week. All the information's in there. He wrote a letter. It was a tribute to a communist, a Leninist actually, named General Baker. And he was praising this guy because this Leninist had said, we are going to topple the communists. We're going to come after communism. He is actually motivated by his own values. He wasn't lying when he said that because he is just a communist ideologically. But also, interestingly, in that denial, he never denies that he's received money from the Chinese Communist Party. I think it's pretty obvious that he at least indirectly has received financial benefits from pushing the Chinese Communist Party's narrative, this sort of we want civil unrest in the United States, we're anti-capitalist. Roy Singham's also married, interestingly. He got married in 2017 to Jody Evans. Jody Evans is the woman who co-founded Code Pink. So you know all those angry, naked feminists that march? I think we just saw them in France. That's her group. She's behind that. She says it's an anti-war group. She used to call out the Chinese Communist Party for their abuse of the Uyghurs. But coincidentally, after she married Roy Singham, this mouthpiece of the Chinese Communist Party, she changed her views and now she's pro-Chinese Communist Party because... You know, that's how it works.
Of course. Yes, of course. Yeah, I don't know why all the feminists get naked. Nobody wants to see that. Okay, Liz, let's change gears here before I throw up. Let's talk about the kids. I have two sons, meatheads, teenagers, and I am blown away by how right-wing, not they are, everyone knows my kids are going to be that way, they're friends. The trends are unbelievable in this country that young people are rejecting the filth. They're finding God. It's wonderful. What happened?
Yeah, it is interesting to see. And didn't one of your sons just write you? I think you posted this on social media and I saw it on X. Like the most wonderful letter for Father's Day. I know you make a lot of jokes about yourself. You're self-deprecating about your kids. But I think that we all know the truth is that you're a pretty wonderful father leading your kids towards the truth. So and that letter is evidence of it. Pretty touching letter right there. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. You are right to observe that there is a difference in these Gen Zers. I guess your sons are probably Gen Alpha, right? Aren't they a little bit younger than Gen Z even?
I don't know. I can't keep track of it. I'm too old.
Too old. Well, ask them. They'll know. Grok it, for goodness sakes. There's a difference. This is why young people are turning away from evil is because they actually recognize that it is evil. And what I mean by that is for so long, even our generation, millennials, right? We were given this camouflaged version of evil that didn't seem like evil. It just seemed like, oh, Democrats in charge of inner cities haven't done a very good job. Maybe Democrats don't actually have the best interests of Black people at heart. Maybe are they just stupid? Are they just corrupt? Are they just self-interested? Are they just out of touch? Are they elite? It wasn't as blatant of evil as we're seeing now. But young people are not stupid now. They look and they see the transgender ideology. Young men see that they're being told that they're inherently rapists because of their testosterone, that masculinity is toxic, that they are deprived of due process under the law. They're told that they're evil because they're white, and they recognize inherently, because inherent within us all is God, is natural law. You can call it nature, you can call it divinity, whatever you want to call it. You know my opinion. I'm a practicing Catholic. I know it's God, but you can call it natural law if you want. We know that that's not true. We know evil when we see it. And when you acknowledge, when you see something that's evil, there's a wake-up moment that happens where you realize, well, wait a second. If there's evil, then there's also good. So what is good? And young people across the country, Jesse, have actually begun to investigate what is the source of good? What's the definition of good? What's the author of good? And it has led them not only to Christianity at large, it's led them to Catholicism, because they're finding that answer in the doctrine of the church. I've never seen anything like this in my lifetime. And it's weird because we almost have the blatant evil of the left to thank for opening the eyes of our youth to the good of Christ.
Yeah, would hardly be the first time in history, biblical and otherwise, that an overabundance of evil have led people to God. Liz, as always, thank you.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars,
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have to be aware that Democrats have a standing army. They've had one my entire life, no matter how old you are. They've had one your entire life, a standing army. And they deploy them on purpose. They don't want you to know this. That's why we did the show. That's why we talk about this all the time. They want you to think every time the animals are in the streets that it's organic, that normal Americans are upset. But that's obviously not the case at all. A standing army of professional rioters they can deploy whenever they want movement in some direction. Sometimes it's defense, like the anti-ICE stuff. Sometimes it's offense. That would be the George Floyd stuff. But it is political power to have a standing army. Maybe one day we'll get a Republican Party, a DOJ, willing to handcuff a lot of these criminals. Fingers crossed. I wouldn't hold my breath, though. All right. We'll do it again.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.